Its appearance of permanence and solidity was laughable. It would dissolve at a touch, for everything was suddenly tissue-thin and friable. She had no control over her thoughts. They had broken apart too, and random fragments of memory surfaced and spun out of sight again. Dancing with Barry at the Walls' New Year's party, and the silly conversation they had had walking back from the last meeting of the parish council. "You've got a cow-faced house," she'd told him. "Cow-faced? What does that mean?" "It's narrow at the front and at the back. It's lucky. But you overlook a T-junction, that's unlucky." "So we're luck-neutral," Barry had said. The artery in his head must have been bulging dangerously even then, and neither of them had known it. Parminda walked blindly from the kitchen into the gloomy sitting room, which was in perpetual shade no matter the weather because of the towering Scots pine in the front garden. She hated that tree, but it lived on because of the fuss she and Vikram knew the neighbours would make if they felled it. She couldn't settle. Through the hall and back into the kitchen, where she seized the telephone and called Tessa Wall, who did not pick up. She must be at work. Parminda returned, trembling, to the kitchen chair. Her grief was so big and wild it terrified her, like an evil beast that had erupted from under the floorboards. Barry, little bearded Barry, her friend, her ally. It was exactly the way her father had died. She had been 15, and they had come back from town to find him lying face down on the lawn with the mower beside him, the sun hot on the back of his head. Parminda hated sudden death. The long wasting away that so many people feared was a comforting prospect to her. Time to arrange and organize. Time to say goodbye. Her hands were still pressed tightly over her mouth. She stared at the grave, sweet visage of Guru Nanak pinned to the corkboard. Vikram did not like the picture. "What's that doing there?" "I like it," she had said defiantly. "Barry. Dead." She tamped down the awful urge to cry with a fierceness that her mother had always deplored, especially in the wake of her father's death, when her other daughters and the aunts and cousins were all wailing and beating their breasts. "And you were his favourite, too." But Parminda kept her unwept tears locked tightly inside, where they seemed to undergo an alchemical transformation, returning to the outer world as lava slides of rage, disgorged periodically at her children and the receptionists at work. She could still see Howard and Maureen behind the counter, the one immense, the other scrawny, and in her mind's eye they were looking down at her from a height as they told her that her friend was dead. With an almost welcome gush of fury and hatred, she thought, "They're glad. They think they'll win now." She jumped up again, strode back into the sitting room, and took down from the top shelf one of the Sanshya, her brand new holy book. Opening it at random, she read, with no surprise, but rather a sense of looking at her own devastated face in a mirror, "O mind, the world is a deep, dark pit. On every side, death casts forward his net." 9. The room set aside for the guidance department at Winterdown Comprehensive opened off the school library. It had no windows and was lit by a single strip light. Tessa Wall, head of guidance and wife of the deputy headmaster, entered the room at 10:30, numb with fatigue and carrying a cup of strong instant coffee that she had brought up from the staff room. She was a short, stout woman with a plain, wide face who cut her own greying hair. The blunt fringe was often a little lopsided, wore clothes of a homespun crafty variety, and light jewellery of beads and wood. Today's long skirt might have been made of hessian, and she had teamed it with a thick, lumpy cardigan in pea green. Tessa hardly ever looked at herself in full-length mirrors, and boycotted shops where this was unavoidable. She had attempted to soften the guidance room's resemblance to a cell by pinning up a Nepalese hanging she'd owned since her student days, a rainbow sheet with a bright yellow sun and moon that emitted stylized wavy rays. The rest of the bare painted surfaces were covered with a variety of posters that either gave helpful tips on boosting self-esteem or telephone numbers to call for anonymous help on a variety of health and emotional issues. The headmistress made a slightly sarcastic remark about these the last time she'd visited the guidance room. "And if all else fails, they call Childline, I see," she had said, pointing to the most prominent poster. Tessa sank into her chair with a low groan, took off her wristwatch, which pinched, and placed it on the desk beside various printed sheets and notes. She doubted that progress along the prearranged lines would be possible today. She doubted even whether Crystal Whedon would turn up. Crystal frequently walked out of school when upset, angry, or bored. She was sometimes apprehended before she reached the gates and frog-marched back inside, swearing and shouting. At other times, she successfully evaded capture and escaped into days of truancy. 10:40 arrived, the bell sounded, and Tessa waited. Crystal burst in through the door at 10:51 and slammed it behind her. She slumped down in front of Tessa with her arms folded across her ample bosom, her cheap earrings swinging.
"You can tell your husband," she said, her voice trembling, "that I never fucking laughed, all right?"
"Don't swear at me, please, Crystal," said Tessa.
"I never laughed, all right?" screamed Crystal.
A group of sixth-formers, carrying folders, had arrived in the library. They glanced through the glass pane in the door. One of them grinned at the sight of the back of Crystal's head. Tessa got up and let down the roller blind over the window, then returned to her seat in front of the moon and sun. "All right, Crystal, why don't you tell me what happened?"
"Your husband said something about Mr. Fairbrother, right? And I couldn't hear what he was saying, right? So Nicky told me, and I couldn't fucking..."
"Crystal,
couldn't believe it, right? And I shouted, but I never laughed. I never fuck..."
"Crystal,
I never laughed, all right?"
shouted Crystal, arms tight across her chest, legs twisted together. "All right, Crystal." Tessa was used to the anger of students she saw most often in guidance. Many of them were devoid of workaday morals. They lied, misbehaved, and cheated routinely, and yet their fury when wrongly accused was limitless and genuine. Tessa thought she recognized this as authentic outrage as opposed to the synthetic kind that Crystal was adept at producing. In any case, the squawk Tessa had heard during assembly had struck her at the time as one of shock and dismay rather than amusement. Tessa had been filled with dread when Colin had publicly identified it as laughter.
"I seen Cubby,
Crystal.
I told your fucking husband..."
"Crystal, for the last time, please do not swear at me."
"I told him I never laughed. I told him, and he still gave me fucking detention."
Tears of fury gleamed in the girl's heavily penciled eyes. Blood had flowed into her face. Peony pink, she glared at Tessa, poised to run, to swear, to give Tessa the finger too. Nearly 2 years of gossamer-fine trust, laboriously spun between them, was stretching, on the point of tearing.
"I believe you, Crystal. I believe you didn't laugh, but please do not swear at me."
Suddenly, stubby fingers were rubbing the smeary eyes. Tessa pulled a wad of tissues from out of her desk drawer and handed them across to Crystal, who grabbed them without thanks, pressed them to each eye, and blew her nose. Crystal's hands were the most touching part of her. The fingernails were short and broad, untidily painted, and all her hand movements were as naive and direct as a small child's. Tessa waited until Crystal's snorting breaths had slowed down. Then she said, "I can tell you're upset that Mr. Fairbrother has died."
"Yeah, I am,"
said Crystal, with considerable aggression.
"So?"
Tessa had a sudden mental image of Barry listening into this conversation. She could see his rueful smile. She heard him quite clearly saying, "Bless her heart." Tessa closed her stinging eyes, unable to speak. She heard Crystal fidget, counted slowly to 10, and open her eyes again. Crystal was staring at her, arms still folded, flushed and defiant looking.